Cavani with the pump fake and one dribble inside to the long two, and he makes it. That's been his game his whole career. But look at him smiling. We go, my bad. The long two. My bad.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Long Two. I am Pete Rogers. He is Natty Wallach, and we are a Carmelo Stanthony podcast, but occasionally talk fantasy basketball. Natty, how you doing today?
I'm okay, and I hope Carmelo is doing okay.
Yes. Best wishes to Carmelo and his health.
Yeah, the whole Anthony family. Everybody. Yeah.
Everyone. Well, just the general world. Best wishes to the health for the general world. I have some pretty big breaking news, Natty, that I feel like you and our tens of listeners have been dying to hear from me. Finally admit, after months and months of pestering questions from you.
Shit, did you get signed by the Nets? Are you going to Orlando?
I am going to Orlando to invade the bubble and pop it.
Congratulations. That's great. I was hoping that was what you were going to say. Awesome. Yep.
I finally saw The Rise of Skywalker.
Wait, when did you see it? How far into the global shutdown where you couldn't do anything else?
Pretty far. Well, once it got up on Disney Plus, then I didn't have an excuse. Then I was like, okay, I got the time. Let's watch it. I had.
What do you
mean?
Didn't have an excuse? You didn't have an excuse when it was in theaters. You're a Star Wars
pay
fan.
Money.
I'm just
go
saying.
See it. I know. But then you had to pay money, and you had to get there, and that's a whole process. But when it's
Wait,
in the comfort
you
of your home,
pay money for Disney Plus. So it's really that's what it is. You just like wanted to be able to chillax.
Oh yeah, I didn't want to have to like actually make an evening of it, or it's just like because then I have to I have to convince my wife Becca that she wants to participate in it, because if it's just during the day when she's working, then I'm just like, well, I've got 3 hours in the middle of the day to just set aside and put my phone down.
Does your wife not support Star Wars?
Oh, she does, but this trilogy, I mean, she saw The Force Awakens and enjoyed it, but like she doesn't have the same nostalgic love for it that I do. And so, when Force Awakens came out, she saw it and was like, yeah, I mean, enjoyable. I want to see what the trilogy plays out. But before we get into actual basketball news, I figure we can continue on this topic a little bit more. I feel like there's this petition or something going around being like, hey, let's replace The Last Jedi and correct the trilogy. Am I crazy in thinking that Last Jedi is not the one that needs to be corrected?
Well, that's an interesting question, because it's two questions in one, I think. It's the first question is, does that particular specific movie need to be corrected? And the second question is, does the trilogy need to be corrected? And I don't think that the answer to either of those is yes. I think you can, it's a made-up world. Just do whatever you want, dude. Like, you don't need, like, the whole canon thing, listen, man, I am a laminated card-carrying nerd. Read all of the old canon shit, like, still consider that more Star Wars than, like, any of the prequels or the sequels, really. Like Dark Empire means more, and like the Timothy Zahn books, like, come on, get out of here. Grand Admiral Thrawn, like, he's more of a character than any of the sequel people are to me in real Star Wars. But this is comic book shit. Like, who cares, man? Just do whatever you want. None of it's real. Like, consider canon whatever you want, but understand that like good stories are good stories, and you can enjoy them however you want to. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, the fact that people are going around being like, we need to cancel this trilogy, are just so ensconced in the fandom that they don't really understand that it doesn't matter. Just do whatever you want. Do fanfic. Fanfic's great.
Yeah. I thought the first spoiler alert for those who haven't seen it, I thought the the Rey,
the Sith win, because they have a whole planet made out of fucking Star Destroyers. That is so Jesus. God. Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
I do feel like, I mean, if we're getting into the nitty gritty here, like, the amount of time and effort that the Sith and the Republic has like put into building these massive weapons of destruction and then never getting to use them, I feel like you would start taking more precautions when you build these massive fleets of like, hey, let's go quickly. Like, let's get going before anything kind of like they eventually develop a plan to like shut us down or have some sort of like backup plan. Like, what if when they brought down that whole fleet, what if all of a sudden then like looming in the horizon is another Death Star and the rebellion's like, well, fuck. Like, we just spent all this effort taking down your whole fleet and this Death Star is just with planet destroying power just looming there in the distance. What are we're screwed. I feel like you should, by this point in time, the Sith should be taking more precautions, having a backup plan, have a plan B.
The problem with Death Stars is that they can be destroyed in the same cheap way that planets and moons can be destroyed, which is you just throw shit at them. Like, you don't need to laser them. You can just throw asteroids at them and obliterate everything, just like the Death Star, which is the size of a moon. Like, I know you can blow it up with clever Jedi tricks and trust your feelings, and that missile like takes a 90 degree turn when totally. It goes down.
Hey, don't
it's a hard left. Like, that's and that's like one of the least ridiculous problematic things in Star Wars, because obviously like all of it's crazy, but you just don't need the Death Star. Like, you could have made a trillion asteroid missiles to kill every planet you wanted just by putting like little engines on all these things. Also, you never get into like how the Death Star travels. Like, it doesn't just get built in one system, blow something up, and then they leave it there.
Do they have just like a giant engine propeller?
Can that motherfucker warp? Like, are you kidding me? Like, what's going on here?
If it can, I feel like if you can, like, okay, if you actually time it, it takes what? A minute max to like recharge this, to like to charge it all up in order to destroy a planet. Like, you know, Princess Leia is not staring out that window for like an hour as they're, you know, right. All like,
is it ready yet? Is it ready right. yet? Almost, so almost.
I just feel like if you have this super planet destroyer that we're presuming if it can warp, like, how can you not just be like, boom, planet, blow it up, warp, boom, planet, blow it up, boom, warp, and just like pop around the galaxy and just blow everything up before the rebellion's even like, oh shit, they have this giant planet destroying, you know, star. Yeah.
And the Star Killer base is also stupid. Like, the whole, obviously, when you look at Star Wars, even a little bit critically, it all falls to pieces. Like, first of all, there's no such thing as magic. Second of all, a galaxy far, far away, the odds of them speaking English are pretty fucking low. Third of all, like, there's no sound in space. And like, lasers don't look like that. Like, you can't see lasers. They're outside.
Well, there's no oxygen to like make explosions.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, and the weird thing about Star Wars is that they let all of that unrealistic and irrealistic shit happen. But like, Luke's dad can't be James Earl Jones, you know? Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's, wait, he can't have a black dad. Like, that's, people won't believe it. You're like, it's about space wizards like 10,000 years ago. What's going on here? Like, his whole voice. Who cares?
People can't deal with it. As long as we're in full agreement that the Sith and the Republic were, you know, led by James Dolan. I mean, I think that's the only thing that we can assume.
Like, people try to read into the Star Wars mythos and being like, look at how vulnerable the Republic and the Jedi were to malevolent, manipulative forces. And you're like, yeah, that, read one history book. Like, what are you talking about? That happens everywhere. Like, George Lucas took primary basic stories and gave them lasers and lightsabers. But, you know, you can apply all of this to everything you want to.
Yeah.
It's, if you look at it closely, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And evidence A is the first movie in the trilogy is about a fucking trade embargo. You know, like, come on, man.
Let's
The Phantom ride. Menace. The deficit.
We have to balance a budget sheet.
Yeah. Rent seeking. Come on.
All right. Well, let's talk basketball. Well, wait,
but did you like Rise of Skywalker?
I enjoyed it. Yeah. I thought the fact that she was Palpatine's descendant was like, okay. I think the biggest thing that I was kind of underwhelmed by, I felt like they gave a serviceable answer to it, but I would have liked them to have really delved in it more, was Rey's and Kylo Ren's like force connection. And they like briefly, or they kind of like, you know, explained it a little bit, but I just felt like that was something really cool and unique to like this new trilogy that they could have done something really cool with, which they didn't really. They were just kind of like, I mean, it was like, we're connected through the, you know, Sith or whatever. I don't know.
I feel you. It's not even like an ante, but like rejoinder, I guess, would be that I don't think that the word Sith is even mentioned in the original trilogy. So, like, I think a lot of Star Wars is about filling in what happens around the movies, and the Jedi duology or whatever, dyad, they're a dyad, that's mm-hmm. what it is. Like, I think that's, like, we're going to explore this in the comic books and the novels and the video games and the TV shows. And because, like, a lot of the stuff that we know about Star Wars wasn't actually, like, even mentioned in the original trilogy.
Yeah. No, I just thought that was something that was cool and unique, that was a different manifestation of the Force that we hadn't seen before, and that it just kind of then fell on, like, nothing really cool came of it.
I agree. I liked the idea. I liked the mechanic, especially because the entire series is about like balance and like whether that's actually a good thing or a bad thing. And I do like the movie shows life and romance and love and hope. Duh. It's a Star Wars movie. But the relationship between Kylo Ren and Rey, no matter what happens with the canon for Star Wars, like that relationship is always going to matter in Star Wars going forward. I think it's the most interesting thing about the entire new trilogy.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Like, it was complicated. It wasn't easy, but they obviously dig each other.
Oh, they did. They dug. The dugging was deep.
But it was also like the retconning in Rise. Also, Rise of Skywalker is such a shitty name. That's so goddamn bad.
Yeah,
that was... Jesus. Wait, so how did you feel when she buried the lightsabers at the end and like lit her new one up?
I mean, it did not strike as much of a chord with me as like Force Awakens when I watched it. And that was probably because I saw it when it like first came out and was like deprived of Star Wars content. Force Awakens,
sure.
Like, everything that happened, I was like, yes, this is incredible.
It was so funny, and like there was so much fan service, but who cares? Right. Like Han Solo's in it. Like, get out of here.
And there was some of that too. There were some moments too in The Last Jedi that were like that. I had like the final showdown between Kylo Ren and Luke. I know some people had issues with that. I thought it was, I rewatched it and I was like, this is actually great. Like, this is awesome. I'm fully on board with this. I didn't find, and I only saw, I mean, I've only seen Rise once, and maybe I need to watch it again. There weren't moments in there where I was just like, yes! Like, even when Ren just, like, or Rey figures out how to do lightning and, like, destroys Palpatine that way, I was just like, okay, cool. Like, I wasn't blown away to the point where I was like, yes, let's do this!
Yeah, a lot of unlocked skills and, like, you know, power-ups out of nowhere occur
in
this.
Right. And I know that people have talked about that, too, where it's like it took Luke, like, all three movies to become, like, pretty proficient with the lightsaber, and Rey, like, picks one up and is like, I am a fucking master.
Ooh, okay, so I'm going to be devil's advocate. I think that happens. Yes, let's go full nerd. Okay, right. So I think the rationalization for why that gets explained later is that there are so few Force wielders in the galaxy anymore. She's like one of the only Jedi, so it would make sense that her skills are like more enhanced. Mm. And also, if she's a dyad with Kylo Ren, maybe she's good at lightsabers because he's good at lightsabers. Mm. Also, okay. That's not really grammatically correct, but yo, if you're good at lightsabers, you're good at lightsabers. I'm sorry.
Okay. So you're saying that there's a specific like matter in the universe. There's a specific amount of Force, and when there are less people who can tap into the Force, those who can tap into it get more of it. Is that kind of what you're
saying? I think that's how they'll they're going to explain.
I mean, that makes sense.
It's fine. There will be a 6-issue miniseries comic book where it's like, oh yeah, well, Rey like got to channel this stuff because when there's only 7 Jedi, like all of them are gods. Whatever. Yeah. Who cares?
I can dig that. Hats off to those who stuck around. Those who
doff, you know, the cap,
tuning into the Long Two podcast, ready for some basketball talk, and we're whatever 20 minutes in and just getting to it, but we're getting to it, I promise. We are talking off season, we're looking ahead, and we're talking one move that each non-playoff team should make this off season. Natty, why don't we start with you? There were 8 teams, we each took 4. And so we have one move, one signing, one trade, one. I know you said a lot of your guys are free agent gets. Mine are a whole plethora of things. But let's start.
Nice.
Charlotte Hornets. What is the one move that the Charlotte Hornets need to make?
Okay. Charlotte's. So this is talking about teams like we have no idea what the future holds, what's going to go on. We're just talking about rosters now and like relatively reasonable predictions for the future after free agency.
We're making a mild assumption that things will be normal enough that a 2021 season will occur and that there will be an off season that will get you that you need to get prepared for that 2021 season.
Yeah. And like you don't have to wear like mech battle suits and just like regular basketball.
Right.
Okay. So Charlotte, I like this team. They're a fun team. So it's Devontae Graham, Scary Terry Rozier, Miles Bridges, PJ fucking Washington, and Cody Zeller. This is a team that is very small, and listeners of this podcast will know that I don't really think that you need to spend hard for point guards or for centers, unless they're elite. I think this team could use a tall wing. I think Joe Harris would be a really smart signing for this team. He's a guard with size. He's not great at defense, but like this team, they don't really need an elite defender as much as they need someone who can space the floor for the real, you know, stars of the team, which are the wings, Miles Bridges, and hopefully PJ. What did I say? Hopefully he will be the best player PJ in the NBA in 4 years.
Yeah, I think that's a great get, especially since this team was like, wasn't bad from downtown during the season. And so I think adding yet another 3-point shooting presence and a guy who I think this
one is one of the best 3-point shooting presence.
Well, and also a guy too who isn't going to take the ball out of PJ Washington or Miles Bridges' hands. Like he can play that role where he just kind of waits in the wings, waits on, you know, behind the line and gets the dump pass, and he's able to, you know, get you a corner three. So I think that's always something where you want to find the pieces to take a young team and give them that next step, but you don't want to do it at the expense of your young talent's development. And so I think Joe Harris is a perfect kind of role player who's already set in that role. Pairs well, gives him some size like you were talking about, as well as outside shooting.
And he's like a 5.5 guy. Like he can start for you or he can come off the bench. You know, like it's if he's your 6th man or even 7th, like it's totally okay. A couple of the other people, I thought about Derek Favors, Christian Wood, and Paul Millsap, I thought would be an interesting addition to this team as like a vet with super savvy and maybe wouldn't mind coming off the bench.
Yeah, let me, I was going to talk about, I had my, in the order of my notes, I had the Bulls next, which I'm covering, but I'm going to switch that. I'm going to switch, pop them down later and instead talk about the Cavs because I have the Cavaliers doing a similar move as to what you're talking about, which is, I think that the Cavs, you know, they need to, this is not anything new. If you look at their depth chart, they need a forward, right? You've got two guards.
They have Chidi Osmond. It's fine. It's there, fine, yes, dude.
Exactly.
They have
Colin Sexton, Darius Garland in the backcourt. And then you've got Andre Drummond. If you're going to, I think they're going to pick up his option or re-sign him or whatever the deal is.
No, it's the player option. And he's picking it up. They're going to have to.
Because it's like $20
million. Maybe extend him. Yeah.
So you got Drummond and then Kevin Love, obviously, and Tristan Thompson. So anyways, the Cavs need... You need a legit forward to get onto this team. And so in the same thought process of Joe Harris, David Bertans, baby, our boy.
Ooh.
Give him
the
give
Latvian him some, laser.
Give him just
fuck
some more three-point scoring. And we know Sexton and Garland, defense is a lost cause on this team. So let's just not even try. And let's just put up as many points as possible on the offensive side. And you've got Sexton, Garland, Bertans, Love, and Drummond running the court. Like, yeah, that can outscore a team per 100 possessions.
So if they were a starting five, it would be Sexland, Latvian Laser, K Love, and Drum. And that is a bad defensive team. However,
it's terrible.
This is a bad defensive team. Like, that's not going to change.
You're into it.
Kevin Love isn't going to play every game like it's the fucking finals. And Drum is what he is on defense. Actually, Drum's still relatively young. He'll get smarter. But the young guards, they need a lot of improvement on that end. And honestly, they need a lot of improvement on the offensive end too, in terms of efficiency. The laser provides them an outlet pass, which would probably help their stats. And, you know, they're scoring. So I love that. That's great. I actually agreed with you. So, like, I tried to pick, like, your teams, too. And I was like, GR3, Glenn Robinson III. Like, he might be a nice sort of, like, affordable, solid wing, Chidi Osman-esque eye roll. But the Cavs are also going to be in a weird position where they're going to be paying their front court a lot of money. So like Tristan Thompson won't be there because Drummond's going to pick up his option. I don't think they're going to keep all three. So unless they can trade Kevin Love, I don't think Tristan Thompson will be there. So that's a pretty expensive front court. And you're going to have to try to use them to help train your young guards. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Kevin Love and Drummond aren't really great for that.
Yeah. Speaking of team that's not very great at developing or, you know, breeding success. What
if you
Knicks
say
got-
Pistons, I'm hanging up right now, you fucker.
What do the Knicks got to do this offseason?
Okay. The Knicks. Talk about their roster. Elfrid Payton, who... By the way, had, let's see.
Low-key good fantasy numbers.
10 points per game, 7 dimes, 4-plus boards, a couple of steals per game, 1.5. Like, he looked better. It's just that to have a player like Elfrid Payton on your team, I think that you need, like, pretty good scorers everywhere else. And the Knicks have one pretty good scorer, Julius Randle, but that's it. Like, RJ Barrett is, I don't know, 7 years old, you know? Like, I'm not sure if he can even walk yet. He needs to be... The way to develop young players is to have a competent point guard and a good defensive center who can get rebounds and throw it down the court. And so, for the Knicks... I do think Elfrid Payton is competent, but like on the low end. So my pick would be Fred VanVleet. I would offer him, like, I think he'll probably stay in Toronto, but if I were the Knicks, I'd be like, yo, you're young, you're exciting, you've been there, you can help all of our young guys, let's go.
Yeah, I like that a lot, especially, and I think you're right that he could, or there's a chance that he stays in Toronto, but I also see, given the amount of kind of like pub that he's gotten recently and like the strides that he has taken since, you know, the championship they won and that run, I could easily see him wanting to be like, I would like to like run my own offense. Let's get out from under Kyle Lowry. Like, let's do my own thing. And, you know, there's always the draw of being the one who saves the Knicks. Now, I'm not saying Fred VanVleet is going to like come in and fix the Knicks, but I feel like there's still always this draw of like, God, this fan base needs someone to root for and to love. Like Linsanity for that like two weeks that like Jeremy Lin was the best player in the NBA, fucking people went mad for him. And so if like Fred VanVleet can take his developing talent from Toronto, where no one cares about it.
Okay, but here's the thing. As someone who grew up adjacent to Canada, I'm from Michigan. I get what you're saying because New York is the city, but Fred VanVleet would be leaving 30 million fans. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no other Canada team.
Well, so, also, like, I guess I was speaking more like in an American market.
Absolutely. And
But you're right.
Like obviously, if you can save the Knicks, you will be immortalized and you'll go to the Hall of Fame probably just because that's where all the media is. Just because you did that. Yeah. Like, Also, the Knicks are sort of known for having, like, hard-headed guards. Like, if FEV came in, you know, he's, like, kind of tough ass, has a little bit of a swagger because he has a chip, and he's like, I know how to win. That's cool. Also, the Knicks have a bunch of, like, guard issues. Are they keeping Frank Ntilikina? What is Dennis Smith Jr.? You know? Like, what do you do with him? RJ Barrett, I think, is the most important asset you have. Orange Julius is there, but also Kevin Knox. Kevin Knox needs a good point guard.
There was a lot of buzz about him, and then it kind of fizzled out with his last season. So maybe there'll be a reclamation project to try to get his career back on track.
Like, I wonder if someone is going to ask the Knicks for one of their front court players and Kevin Knox and just be like, yo, like, we'll take that contract and we'll also take this wing who maybe you don't want because maybe he crowds out RJ Barrett. But I think he's an intriguing player, but I'm not really sure if the Knicks are the right kind of team for him to truly blossom.
That's fair. All right, let's talk about the Bulls. And the Bulls, it's not a player, but it's one obvious move that they got to make. Natty, I'm sure you can probably predict this. This is not
a re-sign Jim Boylan. Fucking 5-year extension, dude. Just give him the reins.
Yeah. Kick Jim Boylan out of Chicago. Like, the fact that your best player and your head coach are already butting heads is not a great sign. But when we did our
disagree, early podcast,
when we did our earlier podcast talking about like our, you know, playoff predictions way too early before the season even started, you and I both were like, this Bulls team could sneak into the 8th seed in the East, or could be even higher. Like, this is a talented squad if everyone's healthy and everyone's firing on all cylinders. And I know injuries played into it, but they won 22 games. Like, that is a wild underperformance. And I'll go one further, Natty. Not only should they fire Jim Boylan, go get Kenny Atkinson.
I like that.
Easily the best coach on the market, was doing phenomenal for the Nets before he just got expedited out of there for, you know, because Kyrie said
conscious uncoupling. Okay, dude. Like, exactly. Someone knew the Rona was coming and he was like, I'm out.
There you go. So I think if you get with the amount of talent that's there in Chicago, get Kenny Atkinson or any coach who actually knows what they're doing, get rid of Jim Boylan. And this team is, you're going to get a big jump from 22 wins.
I was half dreading that. I mean, not even half dreading. So, like, obviously, this has been a scary time. And at one of my darkest moments before Garpax was disintegrated, I was like, oh shit, what if they go get Daryl Morey? Because, ooh,
God,
the team is rife for trades. Like, I think every single player on that team is basically tradable, except I think we both like Wendell Carter. Like, he's a fun player. I mean, he's tradable, obviously, but, like, Zach.
Natty, I'm so aroused right now at the thought of Morey taking over this roster and just, like,
he'd go crazy
and rebuilding it.
He'd go absolutely crazy with it. Yeah. I mean, very interesting things would occur. But, you know, like, Chicago, which is great. Fuck them forever. That's awesome. So the Bulls underperformed, but the finisher was injured. Wendell Carter Jr. was injured. Otto Porter Jr. was injured. You know, it's like they had a lot of bad luck. Yeah. Or maybe they just have bad health staff and a terrible coach who makes you practice too hard. But
they've had that for a while now, back to back.
I mean, actually, the Bulls, I sort of feel like, generally have good coaching luck. It's just they tire of them, like, because they, you know, the MJ doc, it's like, as soon as Phil Jackson has success, it's like, oh, well, get rid of him. Like, as soon as you, even Tom Thibodeau, like, they, anyway, there's so many moves the Bulls could make, but as a Pistons fan, I'm hoping they don't make any moves and they re-sign Boylan and it still sucks. So I think that the best realistic, cynical move they could make if they kept everything together and a move that could actually, like, really help the team is a full-on blue-collar signing. How about Aaron Baines?
Sure. Yeah.
I love Aaron Baines. I know you love Aaron Baines.
I love me some Aaron Baines.
He is a guy that can stretch the floor like the finisher, but also be inside like Wendell Carter Jr. I think he's a real switchable dude for the Bulls. And I think if either one of the young guys was hurt, he'd be able to come in and they'd do just fine. And like, consistency is good for them.
Right. And he brings that Aussie toughness that they've been lacking since Joakim Noah, who's not Aussie, but had that interior toughness.
Yeah, there's a reason to believe that centers won't change as much as we think they will, just because, like, if you have a big fucking strong-ass dude in the paint, it's going to be hard to fucking get a layup, you know? Like, you're going to get fouled, and no one likes to get fouled.
Or just, like, a dude in there who doesn't care. Like, will smack you around with little fucks given. Because Draymond does the same thing, but, like, it's the fact that you can just be physical as, you know, not care about any kind of, like, physicality.
My job is to hurt their driver,
right?
Because then they won't drive as much.
Exactly.
Like, it's very 1950s, like, punch him if you have to, you know? Like, so that gives me hope for someone like Drummond. So it's like, I don't think that centers will score as much going forward, but, you know, there's still an interior presence is always going to be important, I think.
Yeah.
So no, I like, that's one of the reasons why I continue to believe in Wendell Carter. Like, I do like the Bulls roster. I've always liked Otto Porter Jr. He's, you know, like, the contract he has is the contract he has, and good for him. But I think he's a really good complementary player.
Yeah. All right. Before we move on to the final four teams that we still got to talk about, let's take a quick ad break. All right. We're back. Natty, let's talk Hawks. Trae Young, obviously the staple there, but what are they going to do in this offseason to continue their, or even expedite their build?
Okay, so here's their roster, I think, going forward. Ice Trae, Kevin Huerter, the two young wings, DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish, John Collins, soon to be Dr. John Collins, if everything goes apace.
Boy!
Right, your boyfriend, you claimed him, flag planted, you got it. And Clint Capella, right?
Yep.
So I think that team screams to me that you have a lot of perimeter players already. that you're hope that you want to give reps to. So maybe adding to that crowd is a bad thing. So maybe go inside. I thought that Tristan Thompson would actually be a pretty good fit there.
I like that.
Because, like, he's a dude that knows how to win. He's not as old as people think he is. And he can get you a double-double pretty consistently. He's a reliable player. And he has played with difficult-to-play-with players. Like, Kevin Love is sort of difficult to play with. LeBron James is obviously difficult to play with.
You don't say.
Just because, like, they're... When you play with all NBA players, they're, unless they're completely instinctual and you really don't get there that way, like, they're just smarter than you, you know, like, they know where the angles are. They know how people are going to attack or defend. They know how to play better than you do. Tristan Thompson is not as talented a player as Ice Trey offensively, but he's a guy who knows how to, like, be with a star, if that makes sense. So I think, like, that would be a good chemistry alignment. Like, I've played with LeBron. Like, obviously you can score 35 a night. Cool. Right on. You need to work on some other things, and I'm going to be here and I'll have your back. Like, I'm your center.
Yeah. And I like that call a lot. Cause I think I think Tristan Thompson, he's a guy who I've also wanted the Celtics to, you know, if he got bought out, I was like, oh man, I would love for the Celtics to get him for this push. Because he can rebound, he can take up the middle, and he's you're right, he's been around there. And I think that is a lot that he can offer to a young team. And the Hawks are a perfect move for them to make.
Like, he's played against one of the best defensive teams of all time. And he has played against LeBron. So he's been around for a dude as young as he is, and he's had to play in weird situations. And I've always liked Tristan Thompson. I feel like he's a pretty good player.
I think so too. All right, let's talk your Detroit Pistons, and you probably will not like this one move that I took upon myself to make, but
they trade for LeBron.
Yes.
They could. Exactly. He doesn't have a no trade clause, does he? They could do it.
Is that the move you wanted me to?
Shit. Just to make him feel bad.
Just, you know, go win your asterisk championship with the Lakers and then get traded to Detroit.
Dude, I feel so like this whole year was going to be about him. Like,
yeah.
When Kobe happened in January. And then everyone knew the MJ doc was coming out. It was going to be like, this was a moment for LeBron to like elevate himself without like trying to crowd out the spotlight, if that makes sense. You know, like he was sharing it with people and he was doing it for other people. And now it's, oh God, like I still want him to win. Even if there's an asterisk, I would still love him to win this.
Yeah. It might be the one time in my life I ever root for the Lakers to do anything. And I say might, because I actually probably never will. But no, it is not that, like, the Detroit should trade for
the Nets.
Like, much rather, God. That's a good question, though. A Nets-Lakers finals would leave me torn beyond belief.
Dude, the fact that there's fewer games means that the variance is higher. So
there's also no way chance of variance. The Nets are doing nothing with half their team out because of COVID.
No, but I think that throws, like, they're a mule. You know, like, anything could happen. They could tear down the foundation, and the only way to save the Galaxy is to have
psychics. Stop stalling. Do you want to hear what the Pistons need to do? God damn it.
I guess. I'm dreading this. Okay, what do you think? What do you think?
If the Pistons are going to move forward, if they're going to actually contend at some point the near future, go trade Blake Griffin. I know it's heartbreaking, but he's 31 years old. He's had a litany of leg injuries. He's costing $75 million over the next 2 years. It's going to be tough to move him, but there's no way that they're going to have like a success that they can build upon in the next couple of years with Blake there, because he's not going to be their future franchise guy. You've seen players come up, Christian Wood, for instance. You've seen young players on that team develop and like show something. And I think this is, they now need to just steer into that, tear things down. It sucks because, God damn it, Blake was amazing in the 2018-19 season. And, you know, you really hope that he could have built off of that and, like, continue to be that point forward, power forward, do-it-all guy for Detroit. But it's not all terrible for Blake. Because tell me, Natty, what would you say, similar to how we've talked about Tristan Thompson and similar to kind of how we talked about kind of Joe Harris, but this is a superstar going to a team to help make them take that next step. How would you feel about the Suns calling? And you pair Blake Griffin with Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, and you now have this veteran player with this young nucleus, and now the Suns are a real contender in the West.
So you began that by sounding like Vladimir Putin and an enemy of all mankind, and you ended it by being the coolest guy in the world, because of course I'd like to see that. Dude, the passing, like,
it would also be incredible.
Sure. Yeah. This is Dr. Doom's time, which is just going to be tragic, and, like, we're never going to go anywhere. It's just going to be 20 years of horror. But that's okay, because I love Sekou Doumbouya. And Blake should, since he's so old, he should go to some estate with old people. So, yeah, absolutely.
So, like, Arizona makes sense.
Send him to a dry heat, you know? Like, his knees will probably be better. They had Steve Nash. Like, I'm sure that they have a pretty good medical staff, maybe, except Sarver. I feel like Blake advanced in ways as a player that got overshadowed by every other single player doing well. And also that, like, Detroit's, you know, mediocre. Like, it's not even that they're bad. It was that they were mediocre and boring. So I love Blake. I think he's a really good player, and I think he turned into an actual point forward, and I think he would be an incredible on-fire addition to the Phoenix Suns. Like, that would be, I think, a top five team that you'd want to watch.
Oh, God. They would instantly be a team that you would want to watch whenever and however you could. I'm glad I won you back over with him going to the Suns.
Dude, I just, like George W. Bush, like, I looked into your eyes and I saw your soul, and you're not Putin anymore. Like, you're a beautiful angel, and I totally trust you. Yeah, absolutely. Because, first of all, anyone that says anything bad about the Detroit Pistons, aside from Pistons fans, is an asshole. Second of all, the Pistons were in a quandary because they wanted to succeed in a weak conference, and they just couldn't. And that has to do for, I mean, there are a lot of reasons for that, but it's like, if Blake had been healthy, they should have made the eighth seed. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
that.
No, I agree.
The East is so weak, and Blake is so, so good. Like, it's so crazy but whatever. It's so, anything that has Blake playing consistently, I am for. And I don't think it needs to happen in Detroit. I don't really like Detroit's roster right now, aside from a few guys like Sviatoslav Kailiuk and Sekou. Get the fuck rid of Derrick Rose. But, you know, like, there are avenues. He's only 31, Blake. Like, there are avenues for him to have, like, another 4 years where he's playing at a pretty good level, I think, if he's on the right team.
Right. And this last point, then we'll move on because we got two teams left. But, and that was one of the things that I liked about the Suns as a potential pairing, is that the pressure, I feel like, moves off of Blake there. Because it's Devin Booker's team. It's Devin Booker's team, and it's DeAndre Ayton as the second. Like, it's Blake is there to help boost those two guys, or the young squad that the Suns have. As
he's like Klay,
like,
Thompson almost. He's like, exactly. I'm the dude at the other end of the triangle.
Right, which I feel like will help revitalize those legs and allow him to, you know, rest and be healthy for a full, you know, 82 game season, as opposed to like, hey, you're going to a team now where we're again all relying on you to be, you know, our assist leader, our rebound leader, our points leader. Like, you need to do everything.
Dude, and just to remind people, his dimes went up, his three-pointers went up. Like, he looked good. He looked like a legit point forward. It was awesome to see. I will say, so the only dude that I really thought I would get excited about as a signing for Detroit, just because I don't think they can do anything that's, like, really noteworthy, like, give IT a chance.
Yes.
Let's have Isaiah Thomas.
God, I love
it. You know, for the team that had Isaiah Thomas, let's give Isaiah Thomas a fucking contract. Let's see what you got. Let's see what's up.
All right. Two teams left. Maddie, quickly. Warriors. What do you got them doing? Other than fucking getting Steph and Clay back and the first overall pick and now becoming a powerhouse back again in the West.
Right. So I think the only things you can be sure of for the roster are Steph, Clay, Dre, and I think you can be sure that Wiggins will be there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not really – his contract is weird enough where it's like, are you – can you trade it for value? And I also think that he's a pretty good complimentary player for that trio. I had three dudes circled. I think, though, that the first – of them is the best. I'd love to see Danilo Gallinari on this team.
Love it. He was a guy who I was thinking for the Cavs when I was trying to fill that forward position, but him for the Warriors is beautiful.
Dude, like, tall wing, he can shoot. Like, he always makes teams better when he's healthy, and he would be, you know, third banana at most on the team for in terms of like scoring obligation. I think he would look absolutely fucking fantastic on the Warriors, but everybody looks good on the Warriors, really.
Right. But, and we've talked about, I feel like we've talked about him before on the podcast. Like, he has been great into his 30s.
Yes.
I mean, he's 31 years old. And I feel like between the Clippers and OKC this last year, or this year, I guess. Yeah, it was this year.
I know, but it feels but like last year.
Feels
I
mean, like fucking forever ago. But these last 2 years, averaging 19 points per game, averaging, you know, 5 to 6 rebounds, 3 assists, solid. Those are solid numbers on 30 minutes.
Dude, when I first started writing for Fake Teams, I got schooled by one of our readers because they were like, why are you surprised that his plus minus is always good? And it was because I hadn't been watching enough games and I hadn't looked at enough of his film. Like, he's a good player. It's just that he's not ever really been put in a position where he needs to be like a star. Like, he can compliment almost anybody,
which I feel like is where he's going. Like, why change a role that you are thriving in? And with the Warriors, he'd fit, he'd walk right into that same role and it would be perfect.
And I mean, Jesus, like, talk about like the odds of winning a ring with a healthy Steph and a healthy Clay, I think are pretty high.
Oh yeah.
Like, both those guys are younger than LeBron. The only other dudes that I thought of were obviously Melo, which I would love to see. If DeMarcus Cousins is healthy, I think that would make sense for Golden State. A 3-year contract, like, we believe in you. Yeah. And, you know, you're an interior presence. Because, like, one of the things for Golden State is Dre isn't getting younger.
Yeah,
that's going to need to start helping him.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Well, good thing you have the potential for the number one pick overall in this draft.
But what does that mean, really? Like, this draft, I've heard people say this draft is going to be one of the worst drafts in recent memory, but also one of the most surprising. Yeah. Because, like,
well, and I would,
especially again, I with mean, this, like, who knows what the trades
are. Well, yeah, especially if it's COVID. But yeah, but I'd also, I mean, I would trust, I trust that Warriors staff to know who they're, they've been pretty good with their draft picks up until this point.
I guess they're okay with them. Yeah. You know, second round pick Dre, like, I guess they're all right. But the only reason they have Steph is because Minnesota was terrible twice.
Natty. What a marvelous transition to our final non-playoff team.
You go. Look We're all about go. The transitions, dude. It's a fucking Spielberg bleed in, bleed. Yeah, there you go, dude. It's like through the binoculars into what you see. They're digging in the wrong place.
There is clearly one move that the Timberwolves need to do. Their number one priority this offseason is locking down Malik Beasley. 100%.
Okay.
Malik Beasley came in, averaged 20.7, 5.1, 1.9 across his 14 games with the Wolves after getting traded from Denver.
We love him so much.
Excellent He's running mate with D'Angelo Russell. And Towns wasn't even on the court when he and Russell were running games. So, like, Cat, D.A.R., and Beasley, that right there is your fundamental. That is your core for the Timberwolves for the future. Lock down Malik Beasley. Let those three guys play together for a season plus. See what you got there, because Beasley looked so fucking good with them once he left Denver. And there's just – it would be stupid for them to let him even, like, sniff free agency. Lock him down and ride into 2020 with him.
I love that. I think, like, if nothing else changed and that also happened – or, like, if you stripped the roster to its spare bones, it would be D.A.R., Malik Beasley, Jarrett Culver, Okogie, Big Cat, and then you get to fill out however you want.
I don't hate
that. And I think, but like Beasley with Big Cat is such a good tandem, it seems like. But we also like, I think we believe that because we saw what Beasley could do in Denver with Joker. And it's like, I don't want to put too much pressure on him. On either of them to replicate like that duo, but it does seem like it would really be fucking fire.
Yeah, 100%. And you're right. And I think that's something like Jokic and Beasley were bombed together. I think he and Kat could do the same thing. It's just, and you don't need, like, I'm not saying Beasley's going to come in and be another 20 point, but like maybe he is. It's just, you can't let that kind of potential walk out of your door. If you're a young team that is trying desperately to keep Kat as happy as possible and wanting him to stick around, keep your good players and try to push for a playoff spot.
Dude, you just sent Maple Jordan away.
Yep.
Who was a 20-point scorer, more or less, but incredibly inefficient. Like, Beasley has the chance to be, I think, a consistent 16 to 18 guy. He's also a dude that isn't going to cost you as much money as Maple Jordan. And like, you can fill out the roster with like, you know, Marcus Gasol is going to be available. Serge Ibaka is going to be available.
Love it.
Paul Millsap on this team. Maybe. I mean, I love Paul Millsap. Like, I want him on every team. Maybe Christian Wood, another young front court player. I mean, Gallinari would be really good on that team. Nerlens Noel, maybe, like, just have a fucking like cheap front court, shut it down defense guy. That team, I like what they're doing. I just really don't think that they're close to getting to their optimal point so long as they can't up the ante on defense. Yeah. Like, Cat's 24, I think, 23, 24. Like, you know, he's one of the best offensive players in the league. Like, now we have to build a team around him to try to augment and enhance his defense. Like, that's what needs to get better. And you need a good fucking set of guards to do that. Like, Fred VanVleet on that team would be interesting.
Would also be nice. Yeah, I'm not saying no. All right, so there you go. Those are what we think the moves each non-playoff team needs to make. Natty, before we go, we're getting closer, ever closer to the start of the Orlando bubble in the NBA season. We have had multiple players come out and test positive for COVID. We have yet to have, I think DeAndre Jordan is the only player who has officially said that he is not playing. Is that correct?
No, I think there have been some others, but it's going to be trickling in. The trickle might become like a stream, and then it might become a flood, and then it might just be Giannis and LeBron saying, well, let's just play one-on-one and whoever wins gets the ring. In which case, challenge accepted. Are you fucking kidding me?
I'll take that in a heartbeat. So I ask you, Natty, with things that are moving on, with Stephen A's newfound worry that players won't be able to stay in the bubble because they're all horny as hell and need to have sex. What is your feeling about actually being able to see an NBA season this year? Do you think are we going to get the full plan, or is it going to ultimately blow up?
First of all, why does Stephen A think that Orlando isn't the place to go get some ass?
I just love the fact that he is like,
what do you mean?
He doesn't say, he's like, these players, they're going, I mean, they got needs. I thought
Epcot, like, at 7:30 shut down and became, you know, like, laser lights and drinks. What's up? Right. Like, Jello shots. Yeah. I am going to stick with what we've been saying for the past couple of podcasts, which is that I think it is a good thing to try and to keep trying to plan for it. And then if things change, you can't do it. Like, if things remain the same as they are right now, I wouldn't do it. I think it's too dangerous. I definitely wouldn't do it in Florida. But I do feel like that there are ways to have a season. It's just you shouldn't do it in a fucking hot spot. And like that's on them.
Burning to the fucking ground. It's not a hot spot.
And like some of this is on Disney. Like they have all the sway in the world. Like they could have said, they could have told DeSantis, like, this is affecting our business. You have to tell people to wear masks. Right. But they don't do that. And not, you know, corporate America didn't do that really. So this is really the owner's fault. Like they wanted to have a season, but they didn't lay the groundwork to make it safe. And it's not just safe for the players, like the Disney staff that are going to be in and out, like it's dangerous for them. And again, like, I don't want to be this atomized about it, but like, imagine one of the most significant NBA players getting sick or something worse. Or imagine this, like we've said this before, what if LeBron James tests positive, has to quarantine, never gets sick, and then the Lakers don't advance? Like, there's so much that can go wrong with this, but I do think it's okay to try. It's just that if things, you have to stop if things are looking bad. And that's what's happening with a bunch of the states now. Like, New York might shut down again to a certain extent. All the states that didn't wear masks are obviously shutting down because you should wear masks. But it's okay plan for the best. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Wear a mask so that we can watch J.R. Smith take the court again in meaningful playoff minutes.
Dude, the last time we saw J.R. Smith and LeBron on the court, like,
yes, LeBron, yes, we all know,
had
we
one
all
of the best expressions.
And this is why you need to wear a goddamn mask. If nothing else, screw your health and the health of others. Wear it so that we can watch LeBron and J.R. take the court one more time together in the playoffs.
Also, to be nerd about it, like, that's another tall wing player, and like the Lakers are just fucking gigantic. Yeah, like, that is just.
I guess that's true. Avery Bradley has said that, hence why J.R. Smith is now on the Lakers. But anyway.
Wait, so before we go, like, you're a team that's going, go Boston. Like, what's Thank up? You. What would Thank you like to see happen?
Specifically as a Boston fan for the Celtics?
Like, assuming everything's safe. Like, someone you'd like to pick up? Is there someone you like?
Oh, for the Celtics.
Yeah.
Isaiah Thomas will forever be in my heart. So I
that would be
love,
so nice. That's what I
would
was
love to
saying,
see some Isaiah Thomas. I don't
it would
know.
Be so nice.
He seems open to a reunion. I have no idea, but I mean, that would be the number one guy on my list. Or if the Cavs decide that they're going to get Tristan Thompson out of there right now, then yeah, bring him over. But Isaiah Thomas is on the open free market is the guy who I would most.
I'd root
love
so
to see
hard
him.
For the green, and I fucking oh God, hate I you guys. Just, but it's like he's yeah,
he's
yeah.
Such a
it would be cool.
A wonderful guy.
I would also like him to go back to the Wizards and just catch fire. Like, that's the thing. If this actually does happen and it's safe, it's going to be so random and strange.
It's going to be incredible. It's like, yeah. I mean, their plans is like 10 different basketball games in like a 6-hour period every day. And it's just like, I don't even know how I'm going to process it, but it's going to be heaven on earth.
Dude, like Rudy Gobert says he hasn't fully recovered from the Rona. If he can't play, is Utah going to be more competitive because now they have to have like Ed Davis or one of the other front court players like go to the five, and they don't have Boyan, so they're just going to have to go offense, 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 and hope for the best. I like if he can't play, are they a better? They're not a better team, but and they're dead in the water without Boyan and Rudy. But I think they'll be a more exciting team to watch if they play.
Well, we will. There's plenty of time. I think what everyone's reporting tomorrow.
Yeah, it's like
July 1st.
So, like, how can you tell someone to go to Florida in 9 days? Yeah, no, like, get the fuck out of here. That's ridiculous. But there's some gamma radiation. Swallow it.
Things are going on track. We got a lot of time to discuss before actual basketball is played, if it is all played. But so make sure you are subscribed to the podcast. Fake Teams podcast channels where you can find us. So search Fake Teams wherever you get your podcasts. iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. We are there. Subscribe. Drop us a review. Give us 5 stars. If you have any fantasy basketball thoughts or general basketball thoughts, leave them in the comments. We'll address them and talk about them on the show. Follow us on Twitter at The Long Two Podcast. Natty, have a good week. Until then.
You do the same. Everybody keep marching. It's not done yet. And God bless you all.
Stay safe. Until next week.
Bye.